Synod. I hope you've had a nice lunch. We're now coming to item 504, the draft legislative reform measure. You will need for this item GS2027A and the revision committee report GS2027Y. I'd also like to draw your attention to the financial comment on the sixth notice paper in paragraphs 14 and 15. So I now call upon the Dean of the Arches and Auditor, the Chair of the Revision Committee, to move item 504, that the Synod do take note of this report. He may speak for no more than 10 minutes.
Charles George, Dean of the Arches, 454. Mr. Chairman, members of Synod, this measure is a small but important part of the programme of renewal, reform and simplification. It will dramatically speed the process of ecclesiastical lawmaking, and what could otherwise only be done by measure, requiring at least three separate sessions of General Synod, will be achievable by legislative order in a single session. And the lengthened content of the associated parliamentary consideration will also be reduced. The new order-making power will, in the memorable phrase of the former Secretary of General, render a small fleet of foot. If your eyes are already clouding over, please turn to the diagram at Appendix 4 of the report, GS2027Y, which is a dazzling composition by one of the more technically competent members of the revision committee. But there is a downside to such an order-making power. Without proper safeguards, there's a risk that sound lawmaking takes second place to the demands of convenience and speed. And your revision committee has been very aware of this risk, which is why, most unusually, we devoted three long sessions to our task. Nor did the fact that the measure had received strong support on its first reading, or that proposals for amendment were received from only four individuals, deter us from asking ourselves, once our business of revision was completed, whether in principle we considered it right that the measure should proceed. We unanimously concluded that with the safeguards now standing part of the draft measure, its underlying principle was justified. The safeguards can be summarised thus. First, the measure is only concerned with the removal or reduction of burdens resulting from ecclesiastical legislation. Its scope is thus strictly limited. We've given illustrative examples of burdens that could be addressed by order in Appendix 2 to the report. In other words, we can only make small but cumulatively significant removal of obstructions to the missions of the Church. Secondly, the most foundational legislation of the Church of England, as spelled out in Clause 3.1, is exempt. Further, we've amended Clause 3.5 so as to exclude the previous reference to supplementary, incidental, transitory or saving provisions in respect of such legislation. Third, we've included a specific restriction so that an order may not prevent a person from receiving or continuing to receive a financial benefit. Fourthly, in Clause 6, we've spelled out the role of the Scrutiny Committee and what it has to consider, in addition to any representations made to it, including in particular considering whether it's appropriate for the provisions in the draft order to be made by way of order rather than by the alternative procedure of measure. We've also been very conscious, not least from warnings sounded by Peter Brunfels in the debate in York, and by the second commissioner in addressing us at our second meeting, that a measure such as this might prove unpalatable to the ecclesiastical committee in Parliament. That concern explains why, firstly, an amendment has been made to reduce the scope of the order-making power so that it does not allow amendment or appeal of public, general or local legislation, save insofar as that legislation forms part of the ecclesiastical law of the Church of England. Secondly, we've introduced a requirement that before consultation begins, the consultation documents must be laid before each House of Parliament, which will ensure that any proposed order is in the public domain and that members of Parliament and of the public can make representations at an early stage. Thirdly, there is now included a sunset clause, Clause 10, limiting the duration of the powers under Section 1 to 7 to 5 years from the date of laying of the first draft order, unless a longer period is expressly approved by Parliament under the affirmative resolution procedure. And Peter Brunfels, who cannot be here today, has authorised me to say that he is reassured by the amendments and supportive of the measure as it now stands. For the reasons set out in our report, we did not consider it appropriate to expand or qualify the meaning of burden beyond what is there in Clause 1-2. We wish to avoid the possibility that if the burden had to be significant or excessive, then an additional area of subjectivity would be introduced. Also, the order-making power should be available in the case of minor burdens, since it's precisely these which are the primary candidate for the order-making power. Nor did we consider it right to restrict the order-making power to legislation already in force at the time of the measure's enactment. If in any particular case, Synod considers that a new draft measure should be safeguarded from potential amendment by order, then the draft measure can expressly so provide. And we thought it inappropriate to determine the composition, chairmanship and procedure of the Scrutiny Committee, including the right of Synod members to appear in person before the Scrutiny Committee, in the body of the measure. And we preferred, in the interests of future flexibility, to leave that to standing orders. And I refer you to Clause 6.1 and to the draft standing order in Appendix 3 to our report, which will be for consideration perhaps in February next year. But in paragraph 97 of our report, we've emphasised that the making of an appropriate standing order will be crucial to the acceptable functioning of the measure. Finally, we've added a clause 5.6 enabling the Archbishop's Council to withdraw an order from consideration at any point during the process. Now, Synod will retain a key role, both in the ability of individual members to make representations to the Scrutiny Committee, and as you will see in Clause 7, including a power of rejection of an order following debate in Synod. But we refused proposals that Synod should have a power to amend orders. Our view, as set out in paragraph 77 of our report, was that if it were possible for a draft order to be amended at a late stage, that would undermine confidence in the consultation and scrutiny process from the point of view of Parliament and others outside the Synod. And for the reasons set out in paragraphs 57 and following, we also rejected a proposal for a form of hybrid procedure whereby for part of its progress a draft order would be treated as if it were a draft measure. If the content of a proposed order was such as to warrant that treatment, it should never have been the subject of a draft order in the first place. And so, with gratitude to all who served on the revision committee and to those who advised us so well, I move that Synod take note of this report.
Item 504 is now open for debate. I'm going to impose a speech limit of 3 minutes from the outset, given the level of interest in this particular item. Mike... Mike Stalibras first, and then Father Smith second.
Mike Stalibras, York 439. First of all, I would like to express my thanks to the Appointments Committee for having been asked to serve on this revision committee. It was something which came very much out of the blue as far as I was concerned, and I'm not sure that the rest of the committee appreciated what was going to hit them. Initially, I approached this legislation with an extremely sceptical mind. And I think if you understand a bit of my background, you might understand why. My mother grew up in Norway under the German occupation and the Quisling government. And it was something which, throughout my growing years, we were very conscious of a family and discussed quite a lot about the way that power could be used and abused. And I must admit that when I first saw this legislation, my antennae were rather tickled. And I suspect that during the course of the committee's deliberations, I may have exasperated a few other members of the committee by the way that I kept on looking at the way that the legislation as proposed could be abused and misused. However, at the end of our 3 days of deliberation, I had, in some ways, had a conversion experience. By the end of our deliberations, I was no longer sceptical of this measure, but I had come to the conclusion that it was something which was necessary, that it was proportionate, and that with the additional safeguards, checks and balances, which we had actually introduced during our deliberations, this was something which really I felt was going to be a positive step forward. And so I commend the House, this report, and ask for your approval of this draft legislation.
Father Christopher Smith.
Christopher Smith, London 168. My antennae also were tickled by this draft measure. We'll talk more about that on Wednesday, I dare say. But this is really just a note of thanks, if I may, Chairman, to the Revision Committee for having worked with alacrity to allay the fears of those of us who had concerns about the scope of this draft measure and for giving us the greater clarity of the revised draft. The new section 6.3 is particularly welcome, outlining as it does the duty that is to be laid on the new scrutiny committee. It goes without saying that Synod should continue to take very seriously its role in the scrutiny of draft legislation, and I would respectfully submit that even in an era of reform and renewal, that role is as important as ever. After all, what appears to one person as enabling an institution to be, to use the language of the original accompanying paper, adaptable and fleet of foot, might appear to another as a method of making changes too quickly and avoiding proper scrutiny. No doubt the last thing on the corporate mind of the Archbishop's Council would be to give any impression of a power grab. Perhaps, and with the greatest respect, one might feel that the suggestion in the accompanying paper, the original accompanying paper, GS 2018, that circumventing an inconvenience or obstacle could be something as significant as the effective abolition of one of the court's ecclesiastical was a little strong. Heavens above, heaven forfends that we should lose the court of ecclesiastical causes reserved by accident. I'm also very grateful for the illustrative examples set out in Appendix 2 of the report before us, and I note with horror, looking at example 10, that every time I send my curate to conduct a funeral at Golders Green Crematorium, I am in breach of, he is in breach of Section 2 of the Church of England Miscellaneous Provisions Measure 1992, which may have the unintended consequence that I have to go myself on Friday. Thank you also for the inclusion of the sunset clause after consultation with the Second Estates Commissioner. No doubt, as she suggested, this will reassure Parliament and it should also reassure Synod. I am happy to support the report and the draft measure as revised.
David Lamming.
in Ipswich 399. As you will see from the report, I too was a member of the revision committee. I want to just make a few brief observations, and the first one is to express my thanks, and I'm sure on behalf of the revision committee, to the legal officers of the Synod. We required them to do an extensive amount of drafting during the course of our deliberations. We met on three occasions in November last year, and especially we have them to thank for the draft standing orders, which are an appendix to the report. They, as Charles George has said, will obviously have to come back for approval at Synod, but they are a vital part of the overall scheme of this legislative reform. In total, I think we met for about 8 hours over those three sessions in November. Secondly, I'm grateful that we have got the examples in Appendix 2. That was something I called for in the debate in July. Thirdly, I will want to record my appreciation of the attendance at the second meeting of Dame Caroline Spelman. She showed us a very clear grasp on her part of the issues that were raised by this proposed legislation, and it was very helpful to have that, as it were, liaison between our committee and the Ecclesiastical Committee of Parliament. I wanted to highlight that members of General Synod will be involved at an early stage whenever an order under this measure, if approved, is laid before Synod, and you'll see that from the flowchart. And that leads me to my final comment, which is to thank Mike, who spoke a moment ago, for the flowchart. It was very helpful. He proposed it. It's been refined somewhat, but I hope we all find it useful in understanding the process that's proposed under this measure. I also would invite Synod to approve this report. Thank you.
I should have said that it was Father Christopher Smith's maiden speech, so my apologies. Yes, please.
Mary Danacker, Chelmsford, 271. I won't take Synod's time, and I largely want to repeat my thanks. I was on the revision committee. One of the reasons we took so long is because of questions from people like me who were teasing out the potential. And as David Lammings just referred to, the concern of issues, which is where it could be led to. Caroline Spelman also referred to that. And I just want to say that we went through this document through the eyes of potential doubters and people with suspicions. And I want to pay tribute to the patience and the long suffering of Charles George and his team as they addressed and sought to allay our fears. So I too can recommend it. Thank you.
I see no one standing, so I'm going to ask the Dean if he will reply to the debate, and you have up to 5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, it's sufficient to say that if this measure has been a conversion experience for one and an education experience for a member of the clergy, it's performed a useful function, and it appears that what we, in the form it now takes, it seems to have general support. I commend it, therefore, to Synod. I'd only add, use it or you will lose it. That's because of the sunset clause. If in 5 years' time you haven't passed a number of these measures, you probably won't retain this particular one. A number of orders, you won't retain this measure.
So I'm now going to put item 504, that we do take note of this report, to the vote. All those of you in favour, please show. Those who are against. That is quite clearly carried. So now we come to the revision stage. There are no amendments. The motions to be moved on behalf of the steering committee will appear on the have appeared on the order paper, which you will have received this morning. I have given my permission for the stand part motions for the clauses to be moved en bloc. So I'm going to call upon the Reverend Paul Cartwright, a member of the steering committee, to move item 512, that clauses 1 to 11 stand part of the measure. And he has up to 10 minutes, but I hope he might not need all that time.
Paul Cartwright leads 131 and a member of the steering committee. I need no time at all. I have nothing at all to add on what the Dean of the Arches has said. And so I move item 512, that clauses 1 to 11 stand part of the measure.
That is now open for debate. I see no one standing, so I'm going to put that to a vote. All of those in favour, please show. Thank you. Those against? That is also clearly carried. I'm now going to call upon Mr. Cartwright again to come and move item 513, that the long title stand part of the measure.
I do so move.
Thank you. I see no one standing, so I'm going to put that to the vote. All those in favour, please show. And all those against? That also is quite clearly carried. The revision stage has now been completed, and the measure stands committed to the steering committee in respect of its final drafting. And that concludes our debate on the draft legislative reform measure.